Court is ready to hear argument in 4176, In Re Living Centers of Texas Incorporated.
Basically here today under a discovery dispute, which this court has addressed on several occasions. And I believe the gist of the case was expressed by Justice Owen in the Irving Healthcare case when she said that there is nothing worse than a half-hearted privilege. And we believe very strongly today that it is this court needs to make it clear that the privilege that a physician may have in a hospital is just as applicable and just as necessary if we're going to establish a goal of peer review for nurses and nursing assistants in hospitals and in nursing homes, which in fact was the ruling of this court after the trilogy cases, which Irving was one of, in the Lerner case. So we feel that if we are going to have the criteria, which was set out in the Memorial case, of why we have to have peer review, which was exacting critical analysis of the competence and performance of physicians, and as Justice Owen said in Memorial, she did not say just physicians. She said somewhat clairvoyantly, and other healthcare providers, will result in better health care. I don't think my opponent or anyone in the courtroom does not believe that that is a valid statement. More importantly, or just as important, to a peer-reviewed privilege is an atmosphere of confidentiality is required for meaningful communication. Records used by the peer-review committee are not ordinary business records which would negate the peer review statutes. That was also held in the Memorial case. Basically, what we're saying today is nothing more than what was said in the trilogy, which is the Memorial, Irving, and Brownwood, which basically hold that the applications for work at a nursing home, where we have to do criminal background checks, we have to call and make sure that they have never, you know, done anything abusive to someone else, for a nursing assistant or a nurse is the same function, maybe even somewhat more important function in the nursing home arena, as it is for the credentialing of the physicians, which we've done in the Memorial case and in the Irving case. So we feel very strongly that the only way to have a peer review mechanism in nursing homes is to have it just like we have it elsewhere. In other words, it would be a mistake, and we have seen it time and time again in the trial courts, to somehow distinguish the function of peer review, quality assurance, in the nursing home situation as opposed to hospitals or doctors. So we believe that the legislative intent is clear in all of the cases that we have reviewed, that a peer review should be in place for nursing homes. The second main point that I think should be made is that Wharton Manor, my client, was very, very aware of the trilogy cases which came down in 1996 when this discovery dispute came about. Nursing homes had been pretty beaten up on these issues for quite a while. So when the trilogy came, it came on like the big screen TV. It was good news, it was important news for the nursing homes. And so when we started filing our answers to discovery and we got into the trial court level, we made sure that we did exactly to the T what was put forth in Memorial, in particular, sets out the criteria, and secondly, in the Irving case.
Mr. Cowan, do you believe that your position was not vindicated the trial court, in part because the trial judge didn't review all of the documents on the sampling?
First, I do think it is vindicated, and secondly, you do recall that he was given that opportunity and decided not to do it.
My question is, do you think the trial judge should have reviewed all of them? By not seeing some of the documents, ordered production of some that perhaps otherwise would not have if
Well, both in the memorial case, again, as I was saying, we tried to follow that script. That those sample documents were given in memorial, and in a later case called UT at Tyler, which we also cite in our brief, the identical thing was done. A sample was given. Further, under Texas Code of Civil Procedure, Article 193.4, it alludes to the fact that a sample of documents can be given. So, again, we believe that the roadmap was provided to us on the affidavit, which has been talked about. The affidavits in the Memorial case, the Trinity case, and the Brownwood case, and the Lerner case, and the UT Tyler case were affidavits that were provided by a member of the committee, of the peer review committee. So what did we do? We picked Virginia Ross, who was our DON, that means Director of Nursing, to provide the court an affidavit. We feel, again, we did exactly what we were taught to do in the trilogy. And in that affidavit, it's been attacked as going beyond the quality and assurance and assessment plan. Well, in all the other cases, there was a quality or assurance assessment plan put in place, which is basically the enabling statute, if you will, to use an analogy. It says, by law, we have to have peer review, and it has to be set forth in our governing body, so we have that document. But that is the kind of the umbrella. It's the person holding the umbrella, which is important in all the trilogy cases, and that's the affiant, who describes we are complying with law, we are complying with what the governing body of our facility wants to do, and this is our function. And I believe it's quite evident, even on page 21 of my opponent's brief, that the documents involving pressure sore care, tube feeding, and some of the medical things that have been conceded are certainly part of our peer review function, and that the only thing that seems to be left are the credentialing or application type of documents that we do for our nurses and nursing assistants. And again, if you look at the affidavit of Ms. Ross, and again, if you think about just plain common sense, not being in the healthcare industry, but knowing what you need to do to make sure you're giving quality of care, it has to be part of that has to be evaluation of your people. That is an extremely important part of what nursing homes do, is to evaluate, check the credentials, call the preceding employer, all the things that were done in Brownwood and Irving with those two doctors, where they would call up and talk to the former hospitals. All of those things were done, and in those cases, this court held that those documents, the exact same equivalent documents for a nursing assistant or a nurse, were indeed were privileged. As you all know, in the Irving case, CBS was being sued for libel and slander by a doctor who was allegedly had done something inappropriately, and the press took him to task. Well, to defend a libel and slander case, truth is, is a defense. And so CBS argued very strongly, if there was ever a case where we need to see the documents about credentialing and about, you know, what he had done to somebody or what he may have said about somebody else were ever important, it was in that context. And this court, again, Justice Owen held that, you know, the legislature in its wisdom has had to do a balancing test between different interests, quality of care versus civil types of lawsuits. And even under that analysis, a libel and slander case where the exact issue was what the doctor had said and done in those meetings was relevant, and this court held that the privilege was to be maintained. In a case such as this, where you're talking about nurses and nursing assistants, we will not get, as is expressed in the trilogy, that frank and free colloquy or dialogue from a first-year nursing assistant talking about what a doctor may have done or what a nurse had done or anybody else that comes to a nursing home, if that smaller person, meaning smaller in terms of pay scale, smaller in terms of what he or she may be able to do, if that person doesn't have the knowledge that whatever he or she says in front of a committee is going to be privileged. So everything that was enunciated by this court in 1996 in that trilogy of cases and everything that has come afterwards, the UT of Tyler case says very specifically that the affidavit, that if it's not stamped, that it's a actual document of the peer review committee, doesn't mean that it's not part of the peer review committee. That was addressed directly in Brownwood. The affidavit of Ms. Ross went unchallenged in the trial court. All the issues that have anything to do with a waiver were not challenged. Were not challenged at the trial court, and there's not even a section of my opponent's brief entitled "Waiver of the Privilege." He attacks the privilege on the issue that Ms. Ross's affidavit goes beyond the QA plan. Again, we rely on the cases of the trilogy where that, in fact, is what was done. The affidavit went beyond the quality assurance plan or the bylaws in those cases. There was nothing about the fact that a privilege exists that was challenged in the trial court. The other thing, there was no waiver challenge. The fact that only a sample was given, I think I've addressed with Justice Wainwright's questions. Again, in the trial court record, there is nothing to impeach the ability of our privilege. There is no argument of any type of waiver that we may or may not have had, and there is no case law cited to say that this is an ordinary, that this is a record kept in ordinary course of business. There is no case law cited by the plaintiff for the proposition that applications and evaluations of these people are, in fact, kept in ordinary business records. And the reason that there's no case law in my opponent's brief on that point is that there's case law and already for the exact opposite, because again, Memorial and Irving in particular came to this point because, particularly in Memorial, there had been a change in the law to the occupation code, and there was, in fact, some confusion about what an ordinary business record could be. And the court reconciled it, I thought, very appropriately. But now it's somewhat moot because the statutes have been cleared up. But the court, I thought, substantially cleared that up by saying that if it's a record such as treatment of a patient or a financial record of a patient, that is going to be considered ordinary course of business. And it can be gotten in another source. But if it's a document that the committee looked at, reviewed, or promulgated, then it's very clear that that is not a business record. And again, the cases, the trilogy cases, reviewed that point for us.
Can I let me make sure I'm clear about this. Are there any documents that you withheld that were generated in the ordinary course, but then were later reviewed by the peer review commission or committee?
I didn't hear the last part.
Were there any documents that were generated in the ordinary course that had the patient's name on it, that dealt with the patient's condition or anything that had to do with the patient, that were not generated at the request of the committee, but were later reviewed by the committee?
In this particular case?
Yes.
Or, I don't know.
Because it would seem to me you can't ask the committee what they looked at, assuming that it applies and all that. But if they generically ask for all documents that mention this patient's name, it seems to me you would have to give them the document if it was produced in the ordinary course of business. Even if the peer review commission committee looked at it, you wouldn't have to tell them that the peer review committee looked at it. But the fact that they later looked at it doesn't shield it from getting it some other way. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, any records that were medical treatment records that, and I don't know if they were reviewed, but if they were, that we're not saying that. We're saying that that is an ordinary business record. But if you're saying that if we're looking at documents that have something to do with this particular resident, and then are we saying that those are privileged? We're saying they're privileged. Yes, from the point of view of the committee, you cannot get them from the committee, which is what they're seeking to do, but you probably already have them anyway because you have all the medical records with the nurse's notes and everything in them anyway.
Any other questions?
Well, real quick, is these the sample that you gave or offered anyway to the trial court, has that been lodged in this court?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
It's Appendix 3 or 4, if I remember correctly.
All right. Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the real parties in interest.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Mr. Bernard Clark will present argument for the real party in interest.
May it please the court. I'd like to start off, first of all, addressing Justice Wainwright's question as to did it matter whether or not the trial court reviewed the documents. The 13th Court of Appeals denied the mandamus without any reason. One of the reasons that can be considered is that the documents in the transcript you have attached to the relator's brief, he stated to the trial court and this court there were boxes and boxes and boxes of documents, but we only selected a few of them. Since we're dealing with a variety, we're not dealing with a sampling as in here is a form to use. We're dealing with personnel files, incident reports, various documents. Because of that, what he has done is taken a very limited sampling, which obviously favors his side of it, and said, courts, we want to exclude all the privilege applying to all these thousands of documents. It is reasonable to believe that the 13th Court of Appeals said, no, you haven't met your burden on establishing the privilege because you did not produce the documents.
What would you have to do?
Well, under all the cases in the trilogy and Memorial, going back to Barnes, the distinguishing thing is the defendants, one of them is they did produce the documents
but
for the trial.
I thought one of the objections was this is really burdensome and they're privileged, so let us give you a sample to show you their privilege, and that way we don't have to go through the burdensome piece of it just to
I understand that, but in those cases, and let me just jump a little bit here, in the trilogy cases, which, as he said, Justice Owens, you not only stated that gratuitous conversations or documents obtained the privilege with regard to a physician's credentialing, but then you qualified it that that doesn't always mean that those documents are privileged, because physicians are different. As to the burden, those dealt with a physician, so there was a limited number of documents. In those cases, I understand they produced them because there may have only been one personnel file. But in this case, Judge Sklar, the trial court judge, conducted a hearing and issued a ruling. He just didn't say, I'm going to deny it. He said, what I'm going to find is that under the peer review, medical peer review committees, these documents, that is a statutory creature. These documents, number one, have to be reports or records generated by that committee or for that committee. And secondly, because the bylaws by statute create the medical review committee and hence the privilege, their bylaws specifically state that they shall put a written disclaimer on every document that the peer review wants to review, so there isn't a question. Judge Sklar excluded those documents. He found that if they met those two standards, we didn't get them. So to say, should they have produced them?
The second one seems a little formalistic.
Well, it would be, except that the bylaw, which creates the statute that creates the peer review privilege, they put it in there, we're going to put this disclaimer on the documents. It has to be on there. That is to prevent later on being able to say, well, you know, as they've done, employee applications, correspondence, paycheck stuff, as long as, and their position in their briefs, make no mistake, is we touch it, we breathe on it, it's privileged. That's what the committee gets to do. And that committee consists of the administrator, the director of nursing, the nursing staff. They can pick and at least three other members. And not to jump around, so do I think the burden is too much? Not when we're considering that there is guidelines and they couldn't file them for review. Because of the nature of the documents, it's not identical documents. It's varying documents that could have been sorted through. I don't think they met the burden.
So if you bring them in, Judge, we've got 200 boxes here. Judge says, give me a sample. I said, no, Judge, you have to touch each one of these. We insist that you touch each one of these.
Well, if you don't do that, you've waived. No, I think what's happened here is that the primary issue that they're raising is personnel files. In fact, three personnel files were submitted before the mandamus was issued because they were under an order to do so, as here's what we're holding back. They were approximately a quarter inch thick, if that. We're talking about maybe two dozen of those. I don't know where the boxes come from, which kind of frightens me, but we're not talking about a oil and gas case or a complex case against a hospital. We're talking about a limited number of documents in this case.
So whether you can use a sample depends on how big the nursing home is?
No, I think it depends on the nature of the document you're seeking to protect. I think if you can represent honestly to the court that the sampling is a fair sampling that is identical in each file, then I think you could do it. But in this case, the three files that they produced are diametrically opposite as you go through them. It is not the case here. Also, to go back to a statement that my opponent made, and I follow up with Justice Owens, if you have a document in the ordinary course of business, just because the peer review committee reviews it, does it become privileged? That is their position. An employment application. An incident report that merely recites facts, no evaluation, no finding, no recommendation, if they look at it, it's privileged. They have attached it to every document in the file, in their nursing home. They're running the nursing home out of the peer review committee. The intent behind that are three things. Number one, and I say intent, Mr. Cowan keeps using nurse and nurse's aides, assistants, as if they're the same. They're not. Statute defines the training necessary between the two. Nursing homes are not hospitals. Nurses are not doctors. And quite honestly, credentialing is not hiring. They want the court to find that hiring, interviewing a janitor, interviewing a $6 an hour nurse's assistant, which makes up the majority of the employees at these homes taking care of these people, is the same as credentialing a doctor and physician.
Well, on the other hand, do you contend that the care was in any way inadequate because of those people? I mean, it seems like if you do, then there ought to be some peer review. And if you don't, then what's the relevance?
I think the relevance, Your Honor, is that, number one, I think there was, as to the nurse's aide, there was negligence on their part in the way it was handled. But the peer review, as it says by statute, goes to evaluation. What they're trying to do is extend the evaluation to be anything and everything touching those people. Secondly, do I know whether or not those janitors, nurses, aides were complicit in this? No, because I don't have files to go with it to find out. One of the underlying causes here was that our client was molested by another patient who was admitted with a sexual propensity 2 days before. We didn't get any records.
We found out when a nurse broke down crying about it in deposition. Had we gotten the access to the records, we would have known that. That is the public policy we're trying to protect. Protection of abuse and neglect cloaked under, as they said, I think in the Capitol case that came down from the Austin court last month or 2 months, 2 or 3 months ago, you can't just cloak documents with privilege by saying we let a peer review look at them. That's what they're trying to do.
The standard that both sides seem to be arguing about seems awfully amorphous to me. I'm just having trouble trying to think of this as a black letter rule in a book somewhere.
Well,
you say, well, whether used in the deliberative process or not, this page 21.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But you know that. What are we going to do? Get a big rubber stamp that says I thought about this? And I mean, that's not very much harder than what they've done.
If I could address that twofold. First of all, with regard to say the personnel files of nurses, I think the Tyler court made their distinction in the Highland Pines case by saying Section 150 forward is under positions only. That's the peer review. The nursing part of 303 of the statute is written differently. It goes to what goes on in that committee meeting, only as to what's in the committee meeting. I think the distinction that court was making is we have a paramount policy to protect doctors. They're at the top. They're our controlling factor. In a hospital, it is made up of medical treaters and under doctors' cares. These are nursing homes. Most of the care is rendered by $6 and $7 an hour nurses' assistants. They distinguish between the two that it didn't apply. As to what is included, if it's a document, I would suggest, that is normally produced, normally taken in the normal course of business, hiring, firing, evaluating, as long as it does not entail, and I'll take that last one back, if it doesn't entail the evaluation of how to improve the quality at the nursing home, it does not get that privilege. They're trying to say.
But you say that it will improve the quality if we hire this guy.
Well, the trouble is that if you take the position that a nursing home's function is to improve the quality of care for all patients, then all acts would be.
Well, that's why I wonder what the rule is going to be as a result of this.
I think the rule needs to be that if it is a document or a communication that is subject to deliberation within the peer review as to an evaluation purpose only and remediation, kind of like the subsequent remedial measures taken and how that's used, it's privileged. If, on the other hand, it's a document such as an application for employment, a factual recitation of a incident report, those kind of documents, they're kept pursuant to policies of the nursing home and state regulations. They are in no way limited to evaluations. They have to fill them out, and they don't give any condemnation or accolades. They say, here's what happened. I mean, when they say in the affidavit of Virginia Ross that every document that we look at for personnel is privileged and confidential, how do they call somebody in with a phone number to say, personnel, call them in and ask them to come to work? How do they send them their paychecks? But in her affidavit, she is claiming that every single function of employment goes through peer review and is therefore privileged. You can't run a business without those normal functions. What we're suggesting is, number one, they have to have the documents reviewed, and secondly, that there has to be a threshold as to what documents it applies to. Even the trilogy cases, Memorial, the Capitol cases that have come down, the Tyler cases, have had a common theme of if it's a gratuitous statement or document, if it's a document that should be kept in the normal course of business, we're not going to let you cloak it in as privilege. What they're asking to do is to have nursing homes treated differently, treat them like medical providing hospitals and doctors, and let us now run them in a cloak of secrecy.
You would agree, wouldn't you, that nursing home has a higher standard for care of residents than an apartment complex?
Yes.
In terms of the care of the residents?
Absolutely.
But you think it's not the same standard as a hospital would have?
No, I don't, and that's...
Although some states have held that. I don't know that we've addressed that in Texas.
I don't think we have, and I don't think it is, because long-term care, extended care, necessitates lengthy stays, years, where the care is feeding and administering medication. When a patient or a resident in a nursing home has an acute care problem, they are sent to a hospital. Why? Because that hospital will render short-term acute care to that patient and then return them back if it's feasible.
So that's a different type of treatment.
Yes.
You'd say that's also a lower standard of care for the nursing home?
Yes, I do. I think that what we have is that a nursing home's general practice is a lower standard of care than a hospital. Yes, I believe that.
Are the residents diagnosed to some degree when they're admitted at the nursing home?
To my understanding, they are by physician. Most nursing homes have a medical director who is a physician who is on call or on their staff when he's needed for purposes such as that. And then I think their bylaws in this case, as well as I think statute, is they have to have an RN, one RN per 8-hour shift, and that's it. You never find a hospital like that. The only other issue that I would raise is that the self-regulating that was raised in their briefs. To take this case one step farther and allow the nursing homes by statute, by ruling, to say, we're going to create medical peer review committees. We're going to empower them to review every act, every document that goes through our nursing home, and that privilege is going to attach to that, and we'll make sure that we regulate ourselves. If it needs to, we'll report it to the state, to TDHS. We all know many instances, and in this case, instances of falls, breaks, are not reported. So what they're asking is to be made self-regulating by this. I guess my problem here is my opponent has asked the court to only consider here the uncontroverted position that we need to extend quality control, the peer review privilege. This issue is far more reaching that we're dealing with here than that. What we're dealing with here is, do we treat nurses' aides with little education and training the same as a physician? Do we call credentialing the same as hiring? Do we give the nursing homes the ability to take ordinary course of business documents and extend a privilege, which you all recognize, that says you don't have to turn those over?
But it seems to me, from a policy point of view again,
sure,
if your complaint is that those people are not acting professionally enough, they're not acting up to some standard, that's not just an ordinary person walking down the street, then surely as a policy matter there ought to be some review of how those people are doing.
And I absolutely agree with that, and I believe that if the peer review committee conducts an evaluation, which is the phrase used in the statute, of those persons within their committee and issues a report or record, that's privilege. And that's what Judge Sklar ruled in the trial court. What I'm saying is they don't get to say, we've hired 15 nurses' aides and we're going to run everything to do with them from their applications to their paychecks through this committee and cloak it with privacy. That's what they don't get to do.
I could see the paychecks, but the application, why isn't that like a doctor presenting his credentials to a committee to get privileges to practice? I mean, seriously, they would want to do investigations, background checks on these nurses' aides, and do find out do they have professional qualifications to be hired? I mean, so why isn't that part of peer review?
Because I believe that hiring is different than credentialing. Unlike the argument they're making, I believe the credentialing of physicians is a different animal than hiring of your staff.
But if you've got ongoing peer review of the nurses' aides to make sure their skills and their performance is adequate, why wouldn't you make that same sort of determination on the threshold to make sure that they haven't had any issues in prior job experiences? It seems like you would really check them out before you would let them in on the nursing home floor.
Well, you would hope they would.
In some sort of peer review fashion.
But what they've done then is make your HR department a peer review department.
I'm sorry, your what?
Their HR, human resource department of a hospital or of a nursing home, becomes your peer review committee by extension. There are documents contained in the employment file that have no relevance to evaluations.
Well, then I would agree with you. If they're not, if they're used for different purposes,
right.
You can't cloak them with privileges by running them through the committee. But if you can't ask the committee for them, you've got to get them some other way.
Right, and there's no other way to get them.
But if they were evaluative, and that's the only reason they're there, then it seems to me they're privileged.
If there is an evaluation such as a nurse's practice on drug usage that is conducted through the peer review committee of their nurses, and that I think would be a record generated by the peer review for evaluation and would have the privilege. I agree with you. There's documents they're trying to protect. I'll give you an example. Who is the employer? Who is the owner of the nursing home? That will be reflected on pay stubs, on applications, on documents in there. It has no bearing whatsoever on evaluation, but it has a bearing on who the responsible party and the owner of the nursing home is. But by cloaking that document with the secrecy of the privilege, it prevents the disclosure and use at the trial court of the ownership and management documents that are contained. For instance, the paychecks all come from one company, but they're claiming another company operates the nursing home. If you don't get the employment file, the ownership, which is not there for evaluated purposes, it's cloaked and it's denied. It would be that kind of instance. An incident report.
So they refused to give you pay stubs?
Yes. That is in one of the files that they said would be privileged. The incident reports. If an incident report merely recites, here's what happened, without any kind of evaluation, recommendation, commendation, it just says, fill in the blank, date, time, what happened, period. That should not be evaluative. Now, if there is a section that says, what do you think we should do better? Then, if that's done for evaluative purposes to increase the quality of care through the peer review, that's privilege. But the whole document should be privileged.
So just redact out that portion?
Absolutely.
Well, but what does the evidence show as to who ordered the incident reports to be made and where they're supposed to be sent?
Well, that's kind of contradictory because they're saying that the peer review is part of the peer review is ordering and investigating all incidents. But their policy manuals call for an incident report, as does the state, to be prepared any time there is a fall or an incident at your home. So it's hard to say which one are they preparing it by. It's my position that if they have a policy manual that says anytime there's an incident, you fill out a factual recitation, that is not part of a peer review evaluation.
Counsel, on the standard of care, I want to make sure I understand your position and if you distinguish between type of care versus standard of care for a particular treatment. If a nursing home resident contracts a cold, which could potentially lead to something more serious, pneumonia for instance, would the treatment of that nursing home resident come under a different standard of care than a patient at a hospital who contracts a cold?
Absolutely not.
What about as to bed sores? If there's a patient in a hospital that's in a coma and is there for an extended period of time, turning the patient, make sure the patient doesn't have bed sores. Same standard of care between a hospital and a nursing home?
Same standard of care, Your Honor, because what you're dealing with there is the standard of care as to the nursing or physician practice, not the care rendered by the home.
Okay, so really what you were talking about earlier was there are different types of treatment in a hospital.
That's
compared
correct.
To a nursing home, not lower standard of care.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was referring to there's a different care given, but the standard of care for treatment of a medical condition remains the same.
Okay.
Yeah, just real quick.
Yes,
Justice. I asked about this sample that was offered to the judge but not reviewed. Is that correct?
That's what
happened at the trial court. There was a sample, so-called sample of the...
That's my understanding.
And are those actual documents in this court's... lodged with this court? Do we have access to those? Do
you know? You would have to ask Mr. Cowan that. We have not been provided that information.
Okay. So as far as you know, they're not here?
I have no idea.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. In answer to Justice Smith's question, yes, they are in the record. Exhibit number 4, the sample, was exhibit number 9 for the law.
So we got the sample, but not all of them.
No, and we supplemented the record with all of the records.
So that's at your appendix 9?
The sample log is number 9.
But you didn't, okay, so you didn't offer to the trial court the actual documents.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. The actual exhibits are not in the record. The sample log is in the...
I thought we had the actual documents.
The sample that you offered to the trial judge, whatever that was, that he didn't look at,
right.
We don't have an opportunity to look at
we
that.
No, you have that. You have the sample, but not all of the documents that were in that the judge did not want to see.
Okay, and where
but
is the sample?
The samples are there in the record. What's the number?
We've got them.
Your Honor, again, on these records, I would like to read part of what happened in the trial court. Mr. Moser and my associate said, I would like to offer these in camera. We have for your inspection. I will let the court know and plaintiff's counsel that these are not the entire documents that we're claiming are privileged, but we do have a sample of all the documents we claim that are privileged in there for the court to review. Otherwise, we could just bring boxes up here, or actually not boxes, but. And Mr. Clemens responds, with the proviso that you've been able to select the ones you want the court to review, and that's understandable. There's no objection in the record to this procedure. And it is the identical procedure which was done in the trilogy cases. In all of those cases, there were sample documents given. On a few other items that were brought up, on the quality assurance plan, please note that when it says stamped documents, it's talking about documents that it generates will be stamped. And that goes back to what I said earlier that was quoted from the UT Tyler case, where, again, this court found that there were, and this is at page 2, some of the documents reveal on the face that they are records of a peer review. And then down towards the bottom of the page, in response to Ms. McLean's deposition notice, and she was also the affiant, she searched the Infection Control Committee records, which were segregated from the other records at the hospital. She located responsive documents and confirmed that all of them were by or at the request of the committee in connection with an evaluation of the medical care received by McLean and the patients.
What is privileged about pay stubs, for example?
We gave them the pay stubs.
What's privileged about incident reports that don't contain evaluations? Just a factual recitation of what happened.
The incident report is something that a peer review, whether in a hospital or a nursing home, requests that is done so it can do its function.
But is it also done? Do you have to? The state requires you to do it as well.
Yes.
Does the state say that's got to be open for public inspection or anything like that?
My understanding is that it is not open for public inspection, although you do have an obligation to give them a report.
So they have dual functions.
Yes.
If they have dual functions, then for at least with respect to the non-peer review requested, reports, why would they be privileged? If you take that aside and they're required to be produced anyway, what's the basis of the privilege?
The basis of the privilege is the function that we go back to is that if you have to chart, let's say someone falls and breaks their hip, that would be charted in the patient's record. But in the incident report, if you're going to have free and frank discussion, it may have something in there like, she slipped on a banana peel or something like that, which would be much more a part of quality assurance than...
What does the state require you to say about that incident?
The state would require an incident report with the name of the patient, the vital signs, any injury, a witness, and was it reported to the physician?
And that's a separate document.
So the state wants to know that people got hurt, but it has no interest in why or how.
Well, no, there's a section. The lady would say she slipped and... either fell because of a banana peel or because she had another event. It would say that.
If It's indicated in the briefing that that you withheld documentation from the Texas Department of Health and Texas Department of Human Services about violations, deficiencies, and the like. Is that true?
I didn't catch the first part of it.
The briefing says that there's documentation from the Texas Department of Health and the Texas Department of Human Services and other agencies regarding conclusions, deficiencies that was given to you by, or your client, by the state or departments of the state, and that's been withheld. Is that true?
Well, generally, those are public record, those portions of the public record.
That was going to be one of my questions.
We all have standard language that says you can get them just as well as we can get them.
Have they been withheld?
I don't know. No, they were not. We gave them to them.
Okay, so public records from these two departments have been produced to the extent your client has them.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions?
Those that were given to them under the peer review offices, which I don't think.
Thank you. These cases are submitted on the briefs and arguments, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise.